I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I can see he's on hold. My friend Whitfield Crane, friend for 26 years at least. One of my favorite people in the world, man. Not just because he's a great singer. He does a million different bands, man. From Mass Metal to Another Animal, Guys in Godsmack to Life of Agony he was singing for, Ugly Kid Joe. But the thing that's always fascinated me about Whitfield is his personality, his who he is. Like, he has just been a wanderer, a seeker, a searcher, all the time I've known him. I mean, he's never, as far as I know, had a permanent address. Never. I don't even know if he's ever had a car. He took the money that he made as soon as he started getting, you know, platinum records, invested it, and then he just travels. And he travels easily. Like, he doesn't travel super high-end all the time. Oh. Like, he's got a backpack, and he knows how to jump on a bus or take a train or walk. And he goes, I mean, it doesn't matter. I've seen him from Costa Rica to Russia, from Russia to Vietnam, from, you know, Japan and across the board. It doesn't matter. Any island you can think of, he has been to.
The world is a big place, full of many wonders.
And there's one man who's dedicated his life to spanning the globe.
From Amsterdam to the Amazon,
New Zealand to Zimbabwe.
We never know where he'll be sampling the world's pleasures.
Which is why the Johnny Dare Morning Show presents...
Where in the fuck is...
Answer the eternal question, where's Whit? Is Ugly Kid Joe frontman, world traveler, and friend of the show, Whitfield Crane?
Jake says there's a bit of a delay. Jake, Whitfield, how are you?
I'm doing great, man. How you doing?
I'm well, man. You are far away this time. I'm sorry. I guess there's a bit of a delay. We'll have to work our way through that. I was just listening to you at Wimbledon talking about the Orchestra of Doom.
Yes, indeed.
What is the Orchestra of Doom?
Well, I was in Verona. I found myself in Verona, Italy in 2016. And I lived there for 3 months, randomly, of course. And I made friends with all the orchestral players. And then, long story short, I met this incredible conductor, composer named Andrea Battistoni. And we transposed Old School Sabbath with Ozzy Era. We transposed some Ugly Kid songs, Ozzy Osbourne solo stuff, some Richard Crane stuff. And we did a sold-out show at the Ristori Theater, which is the third oldest opera house in Verona. And it was a fantastic experience, somewhat of a suicide mission. But anyway, so I filmed it, and then I just kind of had it, and I'm like, what should I do with it? I'm not sure what to do with it. You know, what can I do with it? And then I was hanging out at the French Open 2 years ago with Pat Cash, who's a really wonderful guy. He won Wimbledon in 1987. He's a great guy. Loves metal. And I showed him the snippet of the Orchestra of Doom. He freaked out, and he said, "Can I please show it to my friend, Sam Righi, who is a big time promoter in Australia?" So we're doing two shows in Australia in December, December 3rd at the Palais Theatre, and then we're doing a show December 7th at, I think it's called Darling Harbour. And I'm going to bring 7 core members from Italy for the orchestra, and the rest of the orchestra we're going to outsource. It's a 35-piece orchestra, and it has no Marshall stacks. There's no electricity.
Yeah,
so it's all analog, and that, as far as my inference would go, has never been done before. And plus, it's Sabbath and Ozzy, so it's super cool.
Well, and I can imagine that it's going to actually sound perfect, because that big doom with the strings and everything that goes along with that giant orchestral sound was built for Sabbath. I mean, it's a perfect match.
It is indeed. I can send you a bunch of the music later, just to hear it. It was a suicide mission, but it worked. As you know, sometimes it does work, and in this case, it did. It is really beautiful, and you are correct. I didn't know in my heart that it would be that profound, but you know, imagine 35 independent instruments celebrating, you know, the song Black Sabbath or, you know, Diary of a Madman or Revelations of Mother Earth. It's something to behold, my friend Johnny Depp.
Oh, I bet Diary of a Madman's going to be amazing. I can't wait to hear that, man. It's and what an insane idea. Like, how do you have that conversation? You meet somehow you run into a conductor, and you know, that's a pretty heavy position to have, and he decides he's going to take a chance on a guy he's never met before who wants to put together Sabbath and Ozzy stuff with his orchestra, and then it just all works. You are truly the Tom Sawyer of music, man. You wander and you get people to do things I never would have believed you could do.
Well, you never know who you're standing next to, right?
Right.
I mean, you really don't. And if you just ask, if you really ask someone how they're doing, that's a good thing to do just in general. But if you really talk to someone and let's say they're, you know, like a 7-Eleven clerk isn't really a 7-Eleven clerk,
right?
You know, like everybody has so many different hats they wear. So, you know, if I'm in Verona, Italy, reaching over to get a gelato, you know that you're reaching over someone who's like, you know, given. I mean, the thing about the orchestral players is, you know, they've given their lives to their particular instruments. Like they're not,
yeah.
Like they're not going to go make it in a rock band. Like that's what they do. So, you know, all you have to do is talk to people and say, how are you? How was your day? And they tell you about their journey. I showed some of this to Ozzy. He freaked out. He loved it. And then he looked at me and said the funniest thing. You know, he couldn't believe it because I showed him Diary of a Madman. And, of course, that really brought him back to Randy years. But afterwards, he kind of was just stunned and he was really touched because it made him feel good. And that's, you know, that made me feel good that it made
right.
me feel good. But and then he looked at me. He looked at me with that, you know, that puzzled Ozzy stare, and he goes, "Oh, this is Don't Jab, man." And they go.
And it's true, yeah.
I never even thought about it. Or it's just Don't Jam.
Yeah, like,
wow,
of course.
That's really true, because I didn't think about it. But, you know, like a rock band jams, like, let's kick it
sure.
in. Sure. You know? Orchestras are just kind of this incredible, they're so brilliant. And I can't read music, you know, my mom can, but I can't. But yeah, so yeah, it's interesting who's outside your front door.
Right.
As we talked about before, I found transitorial behaviors, you know, really force you to be in the moment because you're not going to be there forever. So that's pretty much, I think, if I were to be objective, how I get to meet and be present for such travails.
All right, so listen, before we go much further, because one of the purposes of this is where in the F is Whitfield Crane? First clue for everybody listening is,
yes.
And it's not the greatest way to describe where you're at, but they call it the Pittsburgh of Germany at one place, because it was famed for its coal industry and renowned for the amount of pollution that at one time had completely demolished the region. It's an interesting place. I got a couple really weird clues. One of them is, one of the museums they have is heralded because it's an old coal refinery. They say is the most beautiful coal refinery in the world due to its structure. It was built, let me get this right, it's a UNESCO site now, and it's called the Economic Miracle. It is the clean Bauhaus architecture of Shaft 12, completed in 1932, that makes it very famous. And we'll come back to that. What I wanted to ask you was, when did people stop saying hello or asking how do you do or how are you and actually meaning it? You know, there was a time when that's how you met people. Now it's Tinder or Facebook or it's some kind of a weird social media, but everybody avoids the look
yeah.
in another man's face and only stares into their phone. I was just on a train in Amsterdam and I realized everybody, mm-hmm. I looked down the subway, not one person was in contact with another human being. Every single person, everyone, had their phone out and was staring at it, using it as an avoidance to meet anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Funny enough,
that's a good picture. That'd be a funny picture.
Yeah, but it's a sad picture, though.
That you could take with your phone.
Yeah.
You know, I got to tell you, that's probably an amalgam of the computer being like probably a 70th percentile, in my opinion. And then that would also be a caste thing with money. Because, you know, when you go, we talked about this last time, when you go to the places where there's dirt roads, people say hello and the kids smile, right?
Right. Right.
So you know, it's a strange new thing. You know, and I do think about exactly what you said all the time, and I agree with you. And I don't know if there's a definitive answer, but you know, what I do kind of think about is like imagine like, you know, when back when there was just horses, and then the Model T came, and imagine like our parents that said you just missed it. You know, it used to be like this. We might be the old dudes,
right?
That are saying,
right?
You know, what happened to the thing? So I'm not sure of the answer for it, but I will say that here's the stuff. We've been playing shows a lot recently, and what I do is I'm always hunting for something, but like I hunt out people in the crowd that have their kids with them. You know, you know those headphones that the people on the tarmac have.
Yeah, sure.
They're called, but they block the noise.
Yeah.
So they have those on their kids, and the kids are on the shoulders, and I'll stop the show and say. And I'll say, what is this kid's name? And then, you know, it'll be a big crowd. And we'll say the kid, like the other day, the kid's name was Sasha. And I'll say, what's your dad's name? You know, and then I say, look, there's many ways to do things. And, you know, and that's all good. But, you know, there's video games, there's the iPhone, there's this and that, and this and that. And I go, then there's live music and analog experiences. So everybody give it up. And, you know, Sasha just turned 12 in this moment, which was 3 days ago. And so, you know, I think there's just lots of different ways to do things. And for me, I think sounds like for you, that we prefer human interaction. We prefer live music.
Yeah.
And analog textures, you know?
Well, think of what you did for that kid. Sasha now already knows the feeling of being in the middle of the storm, but it being a positive storm where everybody was smiling at him. Everybody was yelling his name. And think about whatever path you just put him on. You gave him the secret. You gave him that drug, that thing that happens when you become the center of attention, which is, you know, healthy and unhealthy at the same time, but he's on the path now. You know, he'll be a musician. He'll be something in public speaking. He will be,
he will be
a show off, you know? And they're, you know, my favorite people have always been show-offs, from Evel Knievel to you, Mr. Whitfield. The guy who has to go a little further than everybody else, the guy who has to make and bring joy to others. Like, I've watched, you know, I was telling somebody the story the other day, which one of my favorite things, you know, Jesse Dupree from Jackals, one of my dearest friends as well. And at the 20th anniversary, when you guys came in, Ugly Kid Joe, and Jackal was headlining that night, the Ego Ramp was out front. And I was laughing. I go, because you have to understand, they pull a section of it, signaling you don't use that. That's the headliner's band. And so you don't. But third song out, I just watch you just take a dead run and leap about 8 feet across the hole and land on the front of that. And I look over, I see Jesse watch it, and he just smiled and shook his head because you could just see that he saw himself. It just went, that's it.
That's right.
That's it, man. You just, that's exactly what you do.
I agree with that. I remember doing that. I think if there's a toy to be played with, you know, the toy was born to be played with. So,
right.
I think it's very important that you jump the 8 foot crocodile pit.
Yeah,
it's important.
it's always. I remember watching you with another animal at Rockfest. Climb up that goddamn, and in my head, I'm like, come down from there. What are you doing? All the way to the very top of the lighting rig on that aluminum girder, and there's no safety ropes. You're still, and you have a mic in one hand. So there's no really good handhold, and you are no doubt you're every bit of 45, 50 feet in the air. And I just remember thinking, as cool as that is, Jesus Christ, it only takes 1 second for it to go super dark, man.
That is true. That's true.
You,
but I made it down.
Have you ever fallen? Has it ever not worked out in your favor?
Well, when I was younger, like I used to climb everything. And you're right, because you want to manifest attention and entertaining dynamic. I figured when I was a kid, if you climbed something and you could fall down and you went up 45 feet or even 100, that your life is on the line. So at that point, if you tuck the 58 in your microphone in your belt buckle or whatever, then said put your hands and clap, that people would do it, and they did do it. So it was, it felt natural. Though I got to tell you, you know, I've kind of grown into part of myself where that doesn't call me as much as it used to do. So you know, I think there's an age. I think it's gotta be like between the puberty and 29, 30-ish, where you still are doing crazy stuff. So I think you kind of grow in and out of stuff, but, you know, we're always, you know, out there doing something outside the box, I would tell you that much.
All right, listen, we got to take a couple calls real quick here. Julian, what is your guess for Whitfield?
Hi, my father's from Germany, and my guess is Bochum.
That is not correct, although, Bochum, B-O-C-H-U-M?
That is correct.
All right, that not this one. No, keep listening, but I got another clue in a second here. Lawrence, Whitfield's on the line.
Hey, I was in the service, and it kind of sounds like Deutschtown.
It's close, but I got to tell you, no cigar. I think it's your service.
All right.
You stay. Listen, here's the next clue. The Cannon King. This is the best weird part about the whole city. He was insane. In 1870, he was known as the Cannon King. And he built this huge castle you can go in now. Completely insane. He had a huge amount of anxieties, hypochondria, insomnia, phobias of everything from fire to suffocation from his own bodily gases. He had vents that came down from the stables and because he thought that manure would stimulate your imagination. So that made him feel good. He became so insane, he thought that the castle had a personality and it hated him. So... a lot of dark passageways, and you can now go through every single bit of it. But he finally died in 1887. But his kids hated the place. They called it the tomb. So now it is finally up for grabs, and you can walk through it every single day, Whitfield. Now, the place that you're in Germany, it's a pretty interesting, and it's pretty a random place. Most people think Berlin. They think, you know, that Cologne. There's a lot of bigger cities in different places. How did you end up in this
city? One of Germany's most important steel and coal centers.
Right.
And in 2010, it was voted, oddly enough, the European capital of culture.
And that's what made you just jump in and go there. Did you know anybody there? Or did you just wander in on your own?
Oh, I'm on tour.
You guys are playing there. I almost jumped over, by the way, to Prague. My buddy Hector was on such limited time. We jumped into London and then went to Amsterdam, and I saw the days, but it didn't coincide with the flights that he had to take. So I was hoping to come because it was a big skating festival.
We played in Prague, I don't know, like last month, or the last month, and then I lived in Prague for literally 14 days, and what a fantastic town to spend time in for all your listeners. I'll put it this way, we lived in a pretty great hotel for a great price point, and then to get a 20-minute Uber into the town, the beautiful old school town of Prague, every time, to and fro, was under $4 American dollars in an Uber.
Yeah, amazing. Did you make it to the...
Everything's cheap. Yeah?
Did you make it to the Sedlec Ossuary? I went there to photograph that, the Church of Bones, just to the outside.
We didn't do that. We almost did it. But we did go to the this museum that had, like, it was, what was it called? It was the history of all, like, everything from, like, planes to tanks to, like, but, like, from, like, since man had made it in Prague.
Awesome.
But did you see the bones?
Yes, I went to there, photograph it. It was New Year's Day 6 years ago, and it took me 10 years since somebody had mentioned that one of the Rob Zombie films was based on the idea of this Church of Bones. And so that was it. I was like, I have to go see it. And it just took forever to finally get there. When we got there, we actually asked the lady, gave her some money, and she shut the doors for an hour just so we could go in and photograph it.
Oh, no way.
And it was, I mean, it's phenomenal. It's literally nothing but human remains, the entire church, pillars of skulls. Like, it's a Christian church, but it's unbelievable. It's to show the transient nature of man, that we're all going to die and turn into it. But there's a coat of arms made out of, like, human scapulas and femurs and tibias and fibias and skulls, and there's birds, and there's almost like a cheeky, like, comic, like, wink about the way they're putting this stuff together. There's a parrot made out of human bones that just sits to the side for no apparent reason at all. And it was really fantastic. But Prague is, man, the castle up there is amazing. And St. Vitus Cathedral is out of control. I mean, just all of that, all the way to the very top of that museum and castle where all the weapons were. I could spend every day there.
And it's a fair price. Like, if you go to Paris or London or even San Francisco at this point, or Norway or Japan, you're going to spend every penny you have. Or New York. You could go to New York and buy a glass of wine. It's going to cost you $25.
Right.
I can afford that. But you could go someplace like Prague, and everything, good bang for the buck, great people, and just awe-striking visual and textural experiences. So,
unbelievable.
I'm so psyched. Tell me about your trip. I saw you were out there. You went through Amsterdam. Where else did you go?
London and Paris. So what happened was, my buddy Hector's never left the country. He's an amazing guy, really a sweet cat. He's an eight-time world champion GP motorcycle racer. And but he's got his family and he's got all these things he's into, so he never gets a vacation. And so we had a chance to go. I go, let's jump on a plane. We go to London. He loved it there. Then we ended up in Amsterdam. He lost his mind there. He'd seen pictures of the red light district, but he was really like, holy cow, this is amazing. So that's good and weird. And then he wanted to go to the Louvre and see the Eiffel Tower. And it's important to see once. Montmartre was great. And then we end up back in London and we go to the Imperial War Museum. And it's amazing. I mean, from the V1, V2 rockets that Hitler had to the smallest boat at Dunkirk Beach where the English older men came and saved all those troops on the beach. And just really a walk through this history of war in the region. And as we get back in the train and came out at Leicester Square, we come up and I'm like, what is happening? I didn't know we would be in the middle of the 50th anniversary of Pride. And it was a 5-hour parade through the middle of Soho with the best bunch of crazy sons of bitches I have not seen. I was in awe of the amount of revelry that was happening in London that day.
Well, that is awesome. The Pride parades are always, I was at Mardi Gras this year, and that was pretty amazing. If your listeners have never gone to Mardi Gras, it's a trip. It's very, it's an amazing sight to behold. But I was in, Sydney, Australia in 1997, just like you, randomly, and there was the Pride Parade, and how much dedication and joy, and wham, Pride Parade. It's a pretty great thing to land.
And just people are so over the top. I was like, I just what they were wearing and the costumes and the dancing in the streets and the amount of alcohol going down. It was just one of those great people watching. Everybody smiling, tons of, I thought it was interesting in Europe that all the stores, and they call it pink washing now, that everybody's economically aware that there's a huge amount of money. And I'm like, that, my friend, is called real equality. It means that you're getting the same sales pitch as everybody else in this world. And it's pretty interesting to see Burger King and Smirnoff and McDonald's and these major corporations with rainbow crowns and the fronts of their stores decorated. And again, there's a little undercurrent of people getting bitchy about, well, they're exploiting us. I'm like, no, man, that's called equality. Right. We're all being exploited. What do you think Budweiser is trying to sell me or Harley Davidson or these shoes or whatever? That's it. That's equality.
It could also mean you have arrived.
That's it.
You have arrived.
That's right.
Everyone is equal. Hooray.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely. Hey, hold on. A couple more calls. Let's actually, the whole phone line's packed here. Hold on. Hey, Gene, you're on the air with Whitfield.
Hey, good morning, Mr. Whitfield. Johnny there. How are you today?
I'm doing good. I have a phone delay.
I hear that. Hey, are you in Edinburgh?
I am not.
No.
Nice to meet you, and I'm grateful for your guest.
Thank you, and you have a great day.
Stay right there. Hold on a second. I know it's a little tricky with the delay. Hey, Neil, you're on the air with Whitfield.
Hey, morning, Whitfield. Morning, Johnny.
Morning.
Hey, I think I know where in the world Whitfield Crane is. Is he in Essen, Germany?
Bam! You are the winner. Chicken dinner.
How did you figure out?
Yeah, man, it was the London, the Cannon King gave it away. I think I seen it on like Atlas Obscura or a documentary or something. Man, it just boom. I don't know how I know it, but right when you said that, I knew, man.
Yeah, he was a great German nut job. His whole family was built on cannons, and they were just insane with him, and they made so much money. He built a castle, but he had lost his mind. He was huffing manure. And was afraid that he would die from suffocating from his own bodily gases. He finally died in the late 1800s, and he was just a madman, a fantastic madman.
Great whack job, man.
Yeah. All right, Neil, you stay right there, man. We're going to hook you up. Yeah, you want to go see...
Congratulations, brother.
Hey, thanks, Will.
Zombie and Manson are playing this Wednesday if you want to go. You want to go, Neil?
Hell yeah, that'd be awesome.
Game. All right, stay there. Hold on. So Essen, Germany, that's where he's at today. You're there. Are you playing there tonight?
We play there tomorrow. Yesterday we played at the raddest thing ever. It was the Music Lock Festival, and it was in Air La Bonne Alps, France, at Lake Bourget. And, dude, it was Scorpions. It was 50,000 people. Oh. And this other cool French band called, Mass Hysteria. Dude, it was so beautiful. I don't know if you've ever been to the Gorge in Seattle. That was beautiful. Or Red Rocks in Denver. That's beautiful as far as, like, it was so, it was surrounded by the Alps. It was so killer. But yeah, we play tomorrow, and then, you know, we're kind of petering along, and then, you know, that's my story, man. And I'm so happy to hear your voice, and I love you guys, and everything's good on my end, man.
Good. I love you, brother. Bedtime. It's always good to catch up. I hated it. I had that one moment where I thought, man, I think we'll be able to intersect, and the times just didn't work out, man. But it's going to happen. It's going to happen soon.
Well, don't forget, I'm going to come live at your house.
Come on. Come on, man. Listen, that's how we met. Was you remember you spent the night at that little studio apartment I lived with that girl.
And you had a hot dog maker.
That's exactly right, man. That's all we could afford. That's right. I still have it. I have another hot dog. I've gone fancy. I've got an even bigger hot dog maker now.
Oh, delish. Well, I'll be there.
All right, my friend.
Love you guys.
I love you, brother. Whitfield Crane. Stay right there. Hold on, Whit. Won't you welcome me?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.